Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, where one of the hosts is dead inside, feels no love, no passion, and for once, no, it's not me. I'm your host, Mark the Engineer, with me is Bennett the Sage, and we're going to argue about Captain America now.
And first of all, I like to point out that I was under the impression that you were underwhelmed by this movie as I was, judging by your tweets.
Let's go over those tweets, shall we? And let's see how underwhelmed I came off as. Because my tweets were more so about my terrible theater experience in Penn's Landing. Thank you, Riverview Theater. Let's see. The audience I saw Winter Soldier with gasped when they saw who it was. I didn't see the rest of the movie because my palm was fused to my face. Okay, I can understand how that might be misconstrued as I was underwhelmed by this movie, but genuinely, when the moment happened, which, okay, let's just frame it now. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Winter Soldier, if you don't read comics, if you don't read comics news, because really, I don't even think you need to read comics, I just think you need to read comics news. If you have no idea who the fucking Winter Soldier is, go die in a fire. Alright, so, that said, the Winter Soldier is fucking Bucky Barnes. It's James Buchanan Barnes. Alright?
And by the way, when they referred to him by the last name, I had to think for a moment, wait a minute, they're not talking about Clint Barnes. Oh, Bucky Barnes, yeah.
Yeah. So, his mask gets knocked off, they reveal it as Bucky, and there is a loud, I mean fucking loud gasp in the theater. You know, the mask comes off and it's like, fucking, I am your father. And I was like, are you fucking serious? Overall,
I mean, these movies have to treat the audience like they've never read the comics.
Yeah, but there is something to be said about fucking telegraphing. Why the shit would they spend so much time talking about Bucky if Bucky weren't the bad guy?
No, why would Steve Rogers look at the display for Bucky and the Smithsonian Institute for how much we love Captain America and we wish Captain America's dick was in our butts exhibit? Why would they linger on the shot of James Buchanan? I mean, sorry, not Bucky Buchanan, if he weren't the bad guy?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're like obviously, you know, because fucking A-Bear being, because A-Bear's opinion is like, you're elitist and you think that everybody should read everything. It's like, oh dear God, I have fucking standards. But he was like, you know, like these movies are made for everyone, not just for comic book people like you. And it's like, if that were true, because
well, it's a zero sum kind of argument here. We're not asking that all these Marvel movies need to be made specifically for people who have read the comics, nor do we want them to treat us like we're freaking idiots. Although, to be fair, I don't think the Winter Soldier treated us like idiots. I just think the audience you saw it with were idiots.
Oh, totally. The theater experience I had was terrible at the Riverview Theater, where they employ ushers who don't fucking do a goddamn thing, where we were not in a packed house. It was the early afternoon on Friday. I went with my friend Dave. And this black chick and her kids sit in front of us, which immediately the bells start going off like, oh, no. Stereotypes. But, you know, you kind of want to give them the benefit of the doubt because, I mean, I've been because normally I go to the movies in like out in Delaware and Chester County where there's just like suburban kids, whatever. And I've had to, like, you know, turn around and be like, will you please shut the fuck up? Like, if you really wanted to come to a place to talk, I highly recommend a fucking diner. But this woman sits in front of me, and in the first 20 minutes, she answers a phone call. And it's not like a quick phone call, like, I'm really sorry, I'm in the theater, I gotta go, bye. No, she is on the phone for, like, 3 minutes. And then about an hour into the movie, she's on Facebook and not even like check a notification. She just whips out her phone and just starts perusing Facebook. And then finally, in the last quarter of the movie, she whips out her phone and starts filming. And at this point, I am just like Jenga cat all behind her, just arms extended, hands getting ready to grab her by the throat. And my friend Dave knowing that this is about to happen, taps her on the shoulder and says, "Miss, you can't do that." And thankfully she didn't get indignant, and she was like, "Oh, I'm really sorry," and puts her phone away. And I'm just kind of thinking, like, how do you know that you can't do that when there's a big fucking sign on the screen that says all filming is prohibited? So that
didn't she read? Didn't pay attention? It's just people not paying attention, I suppose.
I mean, generally speaking, you know, you would think that that's just a matter of common courtesy, but you know, maybe she buys a lot of bootlegs. I don't know. It's like, not to continue profiling and stereotyping, but you know, people who buy bootlegs, not people who pirate movies by way of download, but people who actually buy bootleg DVDs probably sit there and think like, oh, well, they had to film it. So, and they didn't get caught in their retailing, and they've been around forever. So obviously this is perfectly okay. No, it's not. You're an idiot. But thankfully her role was so small in terms of how disturbing she was over the course of the movie that it didn't take away from any particular scene, where I feel like I got about 99.5% of the movie committed to my head. So I didn't like follow her out of the theater, tag her like a shark, and decide
follow her to her house, slash her tires.
Yeah, seriously, like paint her fucking tires red, white, and blue.
No. You do not disrespect America!
So, that was my terrible theater experience. I mean, it could have been 100 million times worse. I've been in terrible movie experiences. Like, when I went to see the second Resident Evil movie, one dude seriously carried on a 20-minute conversation on his fucking phone, actually describing the movie to the person on the phone. And this was at the same theater, too, so you would think that I would have learned my lesson. However, I didn't want to drag my friend, who lives in South Philly, all the way to Chester County or to Delaware County, which would have put him like an hour away from home.
I think I told you about my one bad theater experience with that theater in DC when I went to see The Adventures of Tintin with about like 24 fans of Channel Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was by far the worst theater experience. They didn't. For those of you who don't know the story, like a bunch of people at Magfest decided, hey, why don't we go watch The Adventures of Tintin? And I was like, oh, I haven't seen the movie. I guess I should go see it with everyone else. And so they organized a bunch of cars to be driven out to this worst theater imaginable. I'm not going to say it's a black movie theater, but this was Washington, D.C. So we were in the theater. Floors were sticky. Bathroom, the door to the bathroom couldn't be closed. So if you looked inside at the right angle, you could see people pissing. And the sink was broken and would not stop overflooding. And the thing about it that made me laugh the hardest was the fact that somebody had bothered to put a little wash basin underneath the sink, which has long since been overflooded, but nobody cared. You could hear it like a waterfall outside of the bathroom. It was that bad.
Yeah, I went to a theater like that a couple of years ago when I went to see Prometheus. I took A-Bear there for his birthday because it was like, yeah, let's go see Prometheus. This would be great. And Kyle picked the theater, which, you know, Kyle doesn't spend very much time on the East Coast. He doesn't know anything of ghetto. So we were at Anime Next that year, and I was like, I'm going to take you to the theater to see Prometheus for your birthday. I'm paying. So he picks this theater on his stupid-ass fucking iPhone, which barely has any kind of, like, GPS function at that point. And he picks a theater that takes us through pretty much a place where if you stopped at a light, you wouldn't be able to move when the light turned green because all four of your tires would be gone. So that was fun. And then ultimately we ended up in this theater that was, like, an hour away and in a parking lot that was completely unpaved, and it was definitely a demographic theater because we were the only people there. It was like me and Chris Zito and Hauser and A-Bear and Bill wasn't there that year. He was at PaducahCon. But It was the weirdest fucking trek to go to a movie theater. And inside the theater, it was very nice. It was actually a very big-ass, cool, well-trimmed theater. But it was just kind of a weird, scary experience trying to get there. And then, of course, we all walked out stunned to near silence. And to break the silence, I said, "Abear, I'm really sorry that I took you to see the Space Dicks movie."
And that's where he turned to you and says, "You don't fucking talk!"
"You shut your mouth or you never open it again." Next time on Dragon Ball Z.
Next time on Dragon Ball Z, Kyle Hebert takes Mark's head through the fucking glass.
Seriously. So, chalk this one up as yet another bad movie theater experience once again at the Riverview in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Please avoid it if you're ever here. I highly recommend the AMC Marple or the Granite Run or the Edgemont Regal. I recommend any one of those theaters, but definitely not the fucking Edgemont or not the Riverview. So as far as the movie went, as is normally the, because we have a procedure for this. It's like trying to, you know, do the nuclear launch. We get the codes and then it's two keys. So I'm going to let you say why it is that this movie, why you feel that this movie was underwhelming. And then I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
Well, I felt I was pretty clear with how I felt about the movie in my Sage Versus.
I don't watch Sage Versus.
For those of you who cannot be bothered... the reason why I felt underwhelmed by this movie is, one, I felt this lacked a distinct amount of fun that the first movie had. Two, I felt like it lost a lot of its optimism, and I felt that it was a Marvel movie set in the Jason Bourne universe, and I just was distracted by how disjointed the movie felt in that way. I did not like the villain in the movie. I felt he was a step down as far as the Red Skull was concerned. And I also felt that this movie, by and large, was, it tried to do what the first movie did without the pulp World War II setting and without that sort of, you know, good and unquestionably evil. It was trying to be like how do you put like Steve Rogers' ultimate morality in this compromised present that we're living in, without addressing the character moments that kind of plot needed to have. It's like they attempted it but gave up halfway through it, and ultimately I feel that the movie is good enough as an action movie, as a Marvel movie, but as we said before in our last tool shed, good enough is good enough, but me personally, I just wish there was more to it. I wish I could like it more, but I can't.
Okay. Now, we've had conversations before about the original Captain America, about why you liked it in the pulp World War II setting, and about how optimistic it is, and, you know, because they had, you know, the Stark Expo, and it's representative of the World's Fair and all that. And those are all perfectly valid reasons to like the movie, because that's what makes a movie originally fun. That's why it is that I still can go back and watch it, unlike, you know, the original Spider-Man movies.
Or the first Iron Man.
I could still watch the first Iron Man. I kind of felt earlier today, just randomly in my head, like the words, "That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it," and it worked out pretty well so far. that movie was still memorable for its dialogue.
Not so much for the CG though.
No, not so much for the CG. Iron Man still, you know, in HD looks like it's a fucking action figure walking down the street, but still, you know, Tony Stark made this in a cave with a box of scraps.
And it certainly looks like it.
But
it looks like Bigfoot is in a homemade knight costume. Explain how I'm wrong.
All right. First off, I will give you the fact that it is a far more Jason Bourne type movie, because, you know, you have your secret agent, secret in quotations, and he's pitted against a government that's corrupt. Now, before I go into this, I can actually draw for you a corollary. Do you remember the tirade I went about on Deep Space Nine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so still vividly in your head, because it wasn't that long ago, I will frame it for you, our gentle listener. Bennett and I got into an argument about Star Trek, in which he's anti-Janeway, and up until recently, I was pro-Janeway, until I finally fucking watched Voyager as an adult, and was like, this bitch will fucking try and self-destruct for any reason!
And I kept telling him, like, you do not remember Janeway the way she was. Just wait, and I just put on this face like, oh, just wait for it. And then he, like a wounded puppy, he comes back and he's like, yeah, Janeway sucks. And I'm like, yes!
Janeway fucking sucks. He's like, Harry, my tea is cold. Self-destruct the ship. So I finally gone through and I watched all of Next Generation. Next Generation is still very much like the original Star Trek in the sense that it's very optimistic. But then Deep Space Nine happens, where the entirety of Deep Space Nine is about shitting in Roddenberry's heart, fuck your optimistic future, and the main lesson to take away from Deep Space Nine is Starfleet is corrupt. And what do good men do in the face of the greatest humanitarian entity in the universe, all of the sudden, being corrupt? Now, I bring that up because the thing about Captain America in this movie, and I'm not a big Captain America person. I've never been a Captain America person. I've never really read a Captain America comic in earnest in my life. But the frame is very, very clear to me, which is that, you know, you start with the man out of time, which creates, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, whatever. And thankfully, he wasn't like rocking back and forth, lamenting all the people he lost and will never be able to properly honor. You know, like he wakes up one day and all the Howling Commandos are dead. What the fuck ever. What this is really like, the Man Out of Time story, which is honestly something that you can kind of mine a lot of stuff from, is the fact that all of a sudden the enemy is not clear cut black and white. You know, here's the fucking Red Skull and Hydra and fucking Hitler. It's that the enemy is bureaucracy. The enemy is politics itself and politicians and agendas. And granted, it's still all kind of framed against this idea that, like, well, politics are only evil because Hydra, like, because Hydra has worked its way into every corner of S.H.I.E.L.D. But still, the message is very clear in the same way that it would be clear in any kind of boring movie or book, which is that, you know, sometimes the enemy is the person who sends you after your enemies. Sometimes it's the sheer amount of paperwork and, you know, like everybody's got an agenda and nobody's trustworthy. And who do you trust when everybody is, you know, treating you like a piece on the board? And that's always kind of been the Nick Fury thing, too, is that, you know, nobody really trusts Fury because nobody knows all of Fury's angles. Because when Fury, again, spoilers, when Fury dies in the movie, I was like, well, clearly he's not dead because he's fucking Nick Fury. No one kills Nick Fury. You never know when you're talking to a life model decoy. That's just kind of the way the man works. Which I thought it was really cute how they didn't go for the life model decoy because they haven't established them yet.
I was about to say, if that was an LMD, I would have just... did I have to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for this shit?
Supposedly there's some tie-in, but they still haven't established LMDs yet, so... Mm. But the framing of the movie as kind of a, you know, as pretty much as a License to Kill, you know, your License to Kill, your rogue agent movie, I thought makes it really exciting, because... Suddenly, it's not cut and dry. You know, you don't know who it is that you can trust. I mean, you kind of look at Robert Redford and you're like, look, there's no reason why you're fucking here other than to be the enemy. I'm really sorry. There wasn't any really telegraphing of his character, but you could kind of tell. It's not like, you know, Ben Kingsley shows up, says he's a good guy, and you know he's the bad guy. But
Larry Sanders does show up and says, Hail Hydra.
Yeah, Sanders shows up and says, Hail Hydra, which I thought was really cute. Like the fact that that Gary Shandling is in any of these movies just like blows my mind. If only because somebody somewhere is like, we'll get Gary Shandling, and I'm just sitting here like nobody knows who Gary Shandling is.
Nobody. No one has known who Gary Shandling is since 1987.
Seriously. So But all right, we'll roll with it. And he's evil. Why not? But the framing of this movie, of the idea that bureaucracy is the enemy, that agenda is the enemy, that the world is out of control and there's still an entity that wants to bring order to chaos theory, like, it makes the movie more exciting in the sense that, you know, like, all of a sudden, you know, Captain America is not only the man out of time, but a man alone and a man apart. And he has to kind of figure out for himself, you know, who can be trusted, because he comes from a time when he was just told who to trust.
Yeah. And I guess I wouldn't have a problem with that direction that the movie, that movie took, if there was more of a, let's say, more of a focus on Steve Rogers' character. But at the same time, like, he has that same sort of non-arc that he had in the first movie. He's a Boy Scout at the beginning of the movie. He's a Boy Scout at the end of the movie. He never really had to have any kind of crisis of faith. He never had to go through any kind of personal inward exploration. I'm not saying the movie should totally focus on that, but, like, every once in a while, like, when he's talking with Falcon, if he could just say, I don't know what the right thing to do is anymore.
Well, I think that one experience isn't really going to turn a character into, because, look, we've had the trilogy where there's been a downturn in a character's morality system. It was Spider-Man 2. It didn't work out very well. Like, the thing is that you need it to be a slow build. You can't just have everything dump on a character, and all of a sudden, based on this one event, he's like, this is gargantuan. This is fucking mind-shattering. I don't know what I believe in anymore.
Well, it's not like one... I think that could have worked in this movie if we had the first movie to compare it to.
Well, like, but that's just it, though. Is that, like, how much is Captain America really doing? I mean, yeah, they make mention of the fact that he's been doing multiple missions and such, and that he's slightly leery of Fury in general. But, you know, they're still dropping New York as an event. Like, they're still talking about New York. So everybody's still kind of on the same page about, you know, like, fucking aliens are out there and we've got to figure out what we're going to do as a planet. Fuck as a nation. Fuck as a collection of nations. As a planet, what the fuck are we going to do? Like, I think that if they went so far as to continue to kind of beat down Captain America's moral system, you know, from, like, give it, like, one more movie, and then he were to say, I really don't know what I'm fighting for anymore. Because he kind of makes mention of that in the movie, where he doesn't really know who he's fighting for anymore, where Natasha goes so far as to say, like, I don't know whose lies I've been telling. I thought I did. Where with a Black Widow, you kind of, you believe it more readily than with Cap, because Cap comes from a time of absolute patriotism. Where, you know, like where patriotism was his faith, you know, to be a God-fearing American is his faith. It's like, it's not just being a Christian, it's being American. That's his Christianity. So it's not going to, like, in that, you know, like, and he came from a time when propaganda was fucking propaganda, where, you know, he risked his life and his safety before he was Captain America to be a soldier. So that's the sort of person that you're not immediately going to think will just, like, turn from his faith and just all of a sudden have a crisis. But with the Black Widow, you really get it, that, you know, she previously worked for the KGB, so her entire career and life is lies, and then she turns and now she's straight, and that's and she's still telling lies, and then she finds out that the lies that she's been telling for what she perceived as the good people was actually, in a roundabout way, and in some ways the direct way, for bad people. And the only person that she could actually trust was Fury, which all by itself is a shattering prospect, because you know Fury is fucking full of shit. So, like, with Black Widow having, because that's what it is, that what you wanted out of Captain America was happening with Natasha.
Exactly. I would definitely argue with that. There was much more character development for Black Widow than in Captain America's movie. Now, you can make the argument that she should have, you know, it's good that this movie has a focus on her character in a movie instead of being just like window dressing, or instead of being just the background character to the other Marvel heroes. But what I'm saying is that kind of focus should be in her own movie. Now, that's not to say that we're ever going to see that movie one day, which we should. But I'm saying that would have been great in her own movie, not in Captain America's movie.
Now, what I argue is that again, since this is about the breaking of a man's faith and his belief system, is that the reason why it is that they went with Black Widow having all of these moments that Captain America, what you feel Captain America should have had in the movie, was because instead of it being, you know, Cap's inevitable breakdown, because it's going to fucking happen, it will happen eventually, that he was the lighthouse in, like, during the storm, during her crisis. And subsequently, that could easily flip around in another movie where he finally does fucking break down. Where, despite the fact that he just blew up the intelligence community, that he dismantled fucking S.H.I.E.L.D., that first off, S.H.I.E.L.D. will go on. It's going to go on. So, ultimately, all he did was slow Hydra down in this movie and keep them from having fucking death machines in the air that are targeting Doctor Strange. So...
Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch.
Right. So, based on that, you know, I think it was a good management, because it's still, you know, it's not, because if they had gone so far as to just break Cap down psychologically to make him have a crisis of faith in his second movie, his third movie, it wouldn't have been as good. Because it would have been deeply seated in the wrong way. I'm watching a man have a personal crisis, in the sense that he doesn't know who to trust, that the man, that the first man he saw, or one of the first men that he saw, you know, all of a sudden he absolutely can't trust him. And then, of course, he dies to make him resolute. And then he finds even worse that everything he ever did meant absolutely nothing. yes, he, you know, he stopped the Red Skull and he turned the tide in the war, but Hydra didn't go anywhere. That Hydra just changed tactics. And that worked for me. I mean, it's not Cap's absolute psychological breakdown, but you want to know what? Going from zero in one movie to breakdown by the next, one, isn't convincing. Two, if you tried to make it convincing, it would have made for a much longer movie. Three, it would have been way up its own ass, because you have any idea how much dialogue you would have had to cram into that man? How many introspective, you know, like crying in the shower scenes this movie would have amounted to?
I'm saying that they could have done it without the crying in the shower scenes, because they did try to have those moments when they tried to have, like, Steve Rogers being like, what the hell am I doing in this time? I don't know. I don't know what the right thing to do is anymore. Like, his conversation with the Falcon. But they never really amounted to much of anything. There was like, hey, buck up, Captain America. You're fucking Captain America. Now speak into this microphone and instill all of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the sense of patriotism to rise up against the Hydra.
I can guarantee you that if you had gotten what you wanted in that way, that you wouldn't have been happy. Because it would have felt like it came out of nowhere. Real psychological character development does not happen over the course of a single movie. And, like, not convincingly, not like this, not in the way that, not in the substantial way that you're talking about. All this did, realistically what this did was, it sowed the seed of the idea that Cap is losing his faith. That he hasn't lost it yet, and that he absolutely is, you know, on the way to losing it, and he's trying to be a beacon because he's wearing the fucking stars and bars as his uniform. But it's like it's not an absolute breakdown, because it's fucking Captain America. You know, you don't want Superman to break down immediately.
I don't want that either.
It doesn't make sense. It most certainly doesn't make sense in the span of 90 minutes.
No, it doesn't. But that's what the first movie was for.
No, it wasn't.
Well, the first movie was to establish where he came from.
Yes, the first movie is to establish where he came from. It establishes where he came from. It establishes his motives. It establishes the kind of character that he has. It establishes his faith. It establishes his fucking religion. But to go from that to immediately, you know, like you have 90 minutes to fucking break down and then reassemble.
It was about 2.5 hours though.
Okay. So 2.5, you have 2.5 hours to break down and reassemble. And oh yeah, all this other shit's going on too.
And well, he also had development in Avengers.
He had some development in Avengers, but he was one part of an ensemble. He finds himself, you know, like, of course, you know, like, you first see him and he's fucking depressed and he's going through his PTSD flashes and all that shit, and he fucking punches the punching bag straight off of the chain. But that movie wasn't really about him. That movie wasn't about any of the characters at all.
Except for Iron Man.
Except for Iron Man to a greater extent, but... like, generally speaking, like, it didn't focus really on anybody. It just kind of had everybody bickering, which, for the sake of character, like nobody's character was really developed in that, except for Bruce Banner, a little bit,
and to an extent, it did establish his foothold within this. It established his foothold within the present, as far as the Avengers is concerned, because it established he's living on the base and he's keeping track of what, you know, what things he's missed. And he also established his adversarial relationship with Tony.
Yeah. But that's all that the Avengers served to do. It didn't really give you too much of his psychology or how it is that he felt about the world at large. It didn't give you any sense of how he felt about, you know, working for the new government. Because, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the intelligence community was, like, when he was around, the intelligence community was an office. Was like a series of small offices.
What about the scene where he finds all those hidden weapons on board the flying death on the flying air platform?
Oh, you mean the helicarrier?
On the helicarrier, he goes and then it charges Nick Fury. He's like, "What the hell is this? I nearly died in World War II to stop this shit."
Which that was that, like, again, like, I'm saying that this is a thread that the thread of trust and distrust, like I can absolutely say that it starts in the Avengers with the scene where he finds out about all the fucking weapons, and that works, because they kind of tie it back into Thor, and we, like, you know, we found a fucking hammer and it came out of the sky, and then we found out there's gods, we need weapons, and that works, but that's not enough to justify or quantify a near total crisis of faith on Cap's part in the span of exactly, and I will say 2.25 movies, because, like, or 2.25 movies, really. I mean, if you're going to break it up by how many heroes it was and how much screen time and how much development time everyone got in the Avengers, and I'd say that Cap was about a fifth of the Avengers, so 2.25 movies is not enough to justify one man's crisis of faith. Now, by the third movie, I mean, now we've got everything on the fucking line. You know, we've got the fact that Bucky is out there somewhere. We've got the dissolution of S.H.I.E.L.D. We've got the revelation that Hydra is still a fucking thing. Plus, whatever the hell they're going to do in Avengers Age of Ultron. So, because now that we know that it's not fucking Hank Pym that creates Ultron, whoops, sorry, I created one of your greatest enemies, then we know that it's going to be Tony, which will once again pit Cap against Stark in a big, bad fucking way. So by the third Captain America movie, it really, you know, like, if they were to frame the third Captain America movie by way of crisis of faith, putting down the shield, walking away, you know, if he were to, like, become a U.S. agent or something, I'd be all right with that. Like, if the arc of the character is going from nobody to somebody with, you know, like, from nobody with a drive to somebody with a drive to somebody who's not entirely sure that they're still fighting for the right reasons to ultimately a person who wants to walk away because he knows that he's not fighting for the right reasons. And if he can't believe in what he's fighting for, then he shouldn't be fighting, because with great power comes great responsibility. And that he would be, that he's better off because by the third movie, I would assume that his whole psyche would be about the fact that the government is using him as a gun. It's not about having a capable person to run missions anymore. It's not about having a symbol of American patriotism. It's not about having a hero and a standard for people to look up to. It's just about the fact that they have the most powerful gun and that they want to point it at anybody and everybody who gets in the way. If that were the overall arc of these three movies, I'd be fine with that because it would feel perfectly natural. How many movies have we gone through where it's just felt like there hasn't been enough cook time for the type of character development that we've seen on screen?
My argument was that I didn't want like that whole like him putting down the shield moment. I wanted him to be more, what's the word I'm looking for? Feel like I didn't feel like his faith was faltering. It just felt like he was hit a stumbling block, if anything.
Which a stumbling block is still perfectly valid.
It's valid, but it just doesn't feel like he's being stymied at anything. It just takes a guy who he met just by running around the Washington Monument to tell him, like, hey, we need to stop him. You're right, black man. Let's stop him.
And you know what? Honestly, I mean, even if that's the Falcon's only purpose in this movie is to just keep him on track, I was okay with that. I was really okay with that because it was still fairly believable that he could, you know, look at and relate to someone else who's been in the trenches. And that kind of keeps him on track where it's like, well, I didn't have to live through, you know, the death of all my comrades. What I thought was the death of my best friend. Yeah, I watched that happen. But every man who I called a comrade, well, I fell asleep. I thought I was going to die for my country. War would be over and they would go on to live their lives. But I, you know, if any of them died, which, you know, none of the Howling Commandos died in action except for Bucky. None of the Howling Commandos died in action.
Except for Bucky, because Captain America's a shithead.
So, you know, like he just, like, for all intents and purposes, he fell asleep, woke up in a different time, and all of his comrades have been, you know, honored in the annals of history. So there's something entirely different from that to a person who, you know, did two tours and, you know, is a paratrooper, lost his friend to a fucking missile. to an RPG, and like there's something really nom about that, where he just kind of, you know, like you could see it in his face where he just, you know, like he relates to it because he was in the fucking Great War, but nothing like that. You know, he never like parachuted in and then the dude parachuting right next to him just explodes into jibs. I would say reserve the overall judgment of character development for the third movie. Like, if he doesn't have his crisis of faith, if he doesn't put down the shield, then obviously the train is on a completely different set of tracks than what we are perceiving they should be on. But right now, the tracks that it's on, I think that's the final destination, is that he's going to put down the shield, is that he doesn't know what he's fighting for, and that, you know, that'll be when fucking Cap dies and they make Bucky the new Captain America. But, oh God, spoiler.
Okay. Spoilers again. They're planning these movies until 2028. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how long these will keep up, but I guess what it comes down to, my problems with the movie is I know where they're going with this movie. I just wish they would decide whether or not Captain America is a character or an icon.
Can't he be both?
I don't know. The more you make an icon, the less human they appear.
Well, they kind of take care of that in the movie. They kind of do show you that dichotomy in the movie where, you know, like they show the Smithsonian exhibit and there he is in the hoodie and the kid notices who he is. And he doesn't go like, fuck, I've been made, cheese it. You know, he just kind of gives him the knowing, like, that's right, kid, you just saw Captain America. Mm-hmm. Buy war bonds.
the setting of the movie treats him like an icon. The setting of the movie, he has yet to really, you know, take on the mantra because he's starting to have his seeds of doubt because Hydra isn't the Nazis anymore. Now Hydra is in every nook and cranny of conceivably every government position there is.
It's like they kind of framed it, like I think you took it best, is that they framed it like a Bourne movie. The most dangerous enemy is the one who has diplomatic immunity.
essentially like that. And by the way, I am looking forward to the day where the big baddie of the Marvel Universe is played by Paul Reiser. I mean, if we're going to continue this choice of casting James Spader and, like you said, Gary Shandling, why not pull Paul Reiser out of retirement? I'm sure he's not doing anything.
I'm sure
he would make.
You know what? I would take Reiser. I would take Jeremy Piven.
Piven?
Yeah.
Entourage man?
Hmm? Yeah.
Entourage?
Well, he's done more than Entourage. He's like, Piven's fucking awesome. Give Jeremy Piven in a fucking Marvel movie as a villain, man. Like, nobody thought that Kevin Bacon would be a good villain, and he fucking was awesome. So.
Wait a minute. Kevin Bacon as what movie villain are you talking about again? I don't remember.
He was in First Class.
Was he? Oh, yeah, you're right. He was in First Class. Jesus.
Yeah, he was the leader of the Hellfire Club.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He was, God, his name is escaping me.
Like, don't look at me, because I don't even fucking remember. But still.
Well, all the X-Men movies are just kind of X-Men movies are kind of underwhelming for me as well, but although I did kind of like First Class.
I liked First Class a lot, but still, you know, like, give me Jeremy Piven as a fucking villain. That would be fucking amazing. Like, if Jeremy Piven were playing Justin Hammer instead of Sam Rockwell, I totally would have believed it, too. Because, like, either choice was good for me. But, okay, so all of that said about character development, I mean, was there anything else that you just felt was just not there in the movie for you?
Some of the action scenes were a little claustrophobic. The elevator scene was appropriate, but, like, the fight on the boat, I felt, was nauseating.
The elevator, like, the fucking, oh my god, the boat scene was amazing. That was sheer fucking Solid Snake all over the place. That was, like, all the best parts of Solid Snake mixed in with Sam Fisher with a little twinge of Hitman. I was all about it. Oh my god, like,
I would too. I would too if I could follow the action, but when there was three or more guys on screen during a fight scene and the camera decides to whip the camera with every punch, I was like, oh well, I guess I'm looking at a blur now.
I thought that the choreography was good. I thought that the camera work was really good. It was kinetic. Like, that was the first word that came out of my mouth when Dave asked me. He was like, what did you think of the movie? And I was like, dude, it was so fucking kinetic. It was like all the fights were fucking brutal. And I liked that. I liked the fact that that it wasn't just about, you know, like, Superman ragdolling dudes left and right. Like, that's the problem with the Superman fight, is that he, like, walks in and he just ragdolls dudes left and right. But Captain America just, like, walks in like a dude made of, like, chiseled from fucking rock. And it's not about ragdolling guys. It's about putting dudes down. It is seriously like watching the difference between Jackie Chan fight somebody and, oh my god, I forgot the transporter's name.
Oh, Jason Statham.
Jason Statham fight somebody. You look at the way that Jason Statham fight choreography goes, and you know that it is just about sheer blunt force fucking trauma. It is not about being fucking fancy and flipping around and Jedi flips and bullshit. He's like, all right, I'm going to kick you in the kneecap. Poof, there it goes. You know, like, and then he moves on to the next guy because that guy's kneecap will never be the same again. It's like that. The boat scene was just fucking brutally amazing, and fucking Batroc was awesome.
When the camera pulled back and they allowed to have a shot longer than 2 seconds, I did like it. But whenever there was these quick cuts, you weren't sure where enemies were in relation to each other. You're not even sure if Captain America is fighting the same person or not.
Look, the focus is not on the cannon fodder that he's beating the shit out of, because, I mean, admittedly, you hang on a shot too long, you've got Watchmen. You know, you've got a fucking Zack Snyder movie where it's, okay, and now quick punch, slow punch, break bone. And then you're like, oh, God! So you don't want that, because, I mean, you gotta admit that the fight scenes in Watchmen were unnecessarily cut. They were unnecessarily fucking, like, way too focused on, it was like, do you remember fucking Tao Fang Fist of the Lotus?
Yeah.
Where they had the whole bone break system?
Yeah.
Remember how pissed off you were at Mortal Kombat 9?
No, not really.
You were mad. You were fucking mad about Mortal Kombat 9 because you were like, all right, seriously, this fucking X-ray bone break shit is getting really tired.
I didn't say that. Maybe Noah said that, but that wasn't me.
I could have swore that was you.
No, all right,
well,
no.
someone that I spoke to was really not about, like, after a while of playing the game, that the X-ray system was really fucking bullshit because it's just like, look, all it does is slow down gameplay at this point. It was cool when it first happened, and if it were just like a random event that was like really fucking brutal based on how well you're beating the shit out of somebody in a fight, like if a fight's one-sided and you beat them until a bone breaks, that's one thing. That's cinematic. That's fantastic. But
I think the problem with that system was that there was only one per character, so it got old fast.
Yeah. And the same thing with fucking Tao Fang, which was just like, it just got really old really fucking fast. So you look at the way that Zack Snyder fucking put together Watchmen, and all you're watching is Tao Fang, Mortal Kombat 9, fucking bone break. All right, I fucking get it. And they're like, no, you need to see this. Like, God damn it!
I'm not trying to say that the slowdown editing so we can see like every single molar getting knocked loose from a Captain America punch. I'm saying keep the camera back so we can see what is happening.
Yeah, but a wide shot fight scene is not exciting. It's just not. Like the thing about wide shot fight scenes is that it feels way too like it feels like a fighting game. You feel way too removed from the action, which is why it is that, like, you probably haven't even noticed this, but fighting game cameras have been getting closer and closer and closer, and it's because the fact that a tight shot is far more kinetic and interesting, and it's more visually interesting than a wide shot where you're just kind of removed from the action as a spectator, where you're just kind of pressing buttons and shit happens. So in Soul Calibur, the camera got a little bit closer. In Mortal Kombat, the camera got a whole shit ton closer. Street Fighter, same thing. Guilty Gear or fucking Blaze Blue, same thing. So you need a tight camera because you need to be able to, like, you need to make the audience feel the kinetic nature of a fight scene. Now, the problem with this is, of course, that now you have a whole lot less real estate to deal with. Plus, you know, you're combating the nature of motion, the nature of lighting. But I felt like I could understand everything that was going on. Now, I don't personally feel like I lost the plot in any of the fight scenes. I could really figure out what was going on. Like I said, the fucking boat scene was just amazing. And every, like, in the entire fight with fucking Batroc was just like, do it again!
Also, I feel like, no, that's kind of bullshit. Batroc should not be able to go toe-to-toe against Captain America. If Captain America lift a freaking 2-ton girder...
Dude, Batroc goes up against fucking Spider-Man. Spider-Man is stronger than Captain America, isn't he? Let me look that up right now. Let me actually look up what...
Well, according to... I don't know. We're talking about two competing movie universe logics now.
Well, I mean, you just base it. You're basing it on, let's see, Spider-Man Power Grid, Marvel Comics database.
And I would argue that some of the best fight scenes in movie history were all pretty, the camera was kind of pulled back and you were allowed to see full body movement. Like the hallway fight scene in Old Boy, or like the fight scene in Dragons Forever. Or actually the factory fight scene in Dragons Forever. Possibly Jackie Chan's greatest fight scene ever put to film.
I mean, some people do it well, some people don't do it as well, but I really don't think that tight shots ruin fight scenes necessarily. Now, guys who can't fucking keep their shit together during tight shots, like guys who are just like, you know, like shaky cam, that's not really, like that doesn't make for a very good fight scene, but... You know, like, when it's done, like, I personally think it was done well. I could follow the action. I wasn't sitting there going, like, I have no idea what's going on. I was pretty overall happy with it. And for the record, on the official Marvel grid, Spider-Man has a 4 strength in the official power rating versus Captain America, which is a 3. Proportional strength of a spider wins.
But again, this is Batroc. When has Batroc been in a Marvel film?
this is the first time he's ever been in a Marvel film, but still, so, based on even when he shows up in fucking Ultimate Spider-Man, like Spider-Man has a hard time with him because he's fast, limber, and he's built like a tank. So
he looks like a jacked up Macklemore.
Yeah. So like the idea that he can take Spider-Man but not Cap doesn't make sense because Cap is less strong than Spider-Man. Now, as far as endurance goes, like they have intelligence, strength, speed, durability. Cap's durability is a 3, and Spider-Man's durability is a 3. So they can take the same amount of hits, but Parker hits harder. So the argument is that Batroc can do the same damage, like can do roughly the same damage to both of them, but if Spider-Man actually lands a hit on him, then he's going to go down faster in a fight with Spider-Man than he would with Captain America. Plus you have to remember the fact that Cap's always got the shield, and they address that. They pretty much address that the fight was a stalemate right up until the point when Cap put the shield down.
by that movie's logic, Batroc was just a mercenary. He didn't have the super soldier serum. There was no reason to believe that he was superhuman.
Well, I mean, what's superhuman though?
Captain America lifting a 2-ton girder to get the Winter Soldier to escape, to help Bucky.
Which he struggled with. Plus Bucky.
He struggled, but that's superhuman. To even make it budge.
But that's about Cap's strength. That's not about Cap's durability or his endurance. The fact is that at no point ever has someone landed a punch on Captain America in these movies and he's just stood there like Superman, like, you're new at this, aren't you? He's still malleable. He still has the ability to be knocked down. It doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take a fucking rocket launcher to put him on his ass.
No, but I'm talking about a punch from him should do more damage than like, well, that kind of hurt.
But you don't know. I mean, the guy's clad in armor. You don't know what his overall training is in this version of Batroc.
Think when they were going through the intel, they say like, by the way, this guy has had like some kind of surgery or whatever bullshit Marvel excuse to explain away the fact that he could take Captain America's punches like no one else in the movie.
But he was also a boss character. I mean, okay, the Black Widow isn't superhuman either, but she takes some hard fucking hits.
You have to give some leeway to the heroes. I'll admit that.
It's not about giving leeway to heroes though. It's just about having this idea that someone in the Marvel universe, like suspending a little bit of disbelief and just believing that somebody who trains themselves properly can take a shot from Cap. Now, granted, they'll probably, you know, get a rib or two or five broken, but some people can, you know, just kind of walk from that. Because, like, fucking Whiplash in Iron Man 2, he wasn't superhuman, but he was fucking ridiculous because he was fucking Russian.
He was Mickey Rourke is what he was.
Yeah, fucking Marv goes against fucking Iron Man and he doesn't even blink. So I'll believe Whiplash.
And I couldn't, by the way, Whiplash didn't have the armor. He just had like the exoskeleton to make him so he can handle the whips. That's about it. And considering like everything that Tony Stark was able to do in Avengers and even in the first Iron Man, there was no reason to believe that he should have this much trouble dealing with Whiplash. And I think Iron Man 2 kind of labored under that thought too, because after the racing fight scene, that's it. No more encounters with Whiplash until the very end.
Yeah, at which point he's the Crimson Dynamo.
So,
but if I can be expected to believe that Whiplash can go nearly armorless in his fucking, you know, like in his fucking prison jumpsuit and an exoskeleton and go against Iron Man, then I can believe that Batroc can just be a hard bastard, you know, like I can believe that.
I mean, you can believe that, I can't. That's just what it comes down to right there.
Which is a shame, because it means that, like, because you couldn't believe that, that's just something unnecessary that, like, that's something that makes the movie unnecessarily not as good for you.
Well, that's, well,
I mean, like, what do you expect? Like, that's really the question, is that, you know, you talk about good enough being good enough, and you're trying to quote me and say that good enough is good enough, but, I mean, really...
I just wish, like, there were small little things in this movie that they could have done to make me like this movie better.
Like what?
Like, maybe change some of the dialogue between Falcon so that there's more of a chance that his faith is starting to crumble rather than just, stumble a little.
Yeah, but you also want every character to have a mile-long pathos.
We've
gone through this conversation where you want to have characters to have it wasn't an argument, but we had like a long conversation about how every character doesn't have to have a pathos. Sometimes a character is just a fucking trickster.
And I understand that. I'm not asking for Falcon to have like a mile-long pathos, and I'm not even ostensibly asking for Black Widow to have a mile-long pathos. Let her have her own movie for that. But when you're taking the main character of the movie, the titular character of the movie, and you're just, it doesn't feel like the crisis that he went through had that necessary weight behind it. There was some rumblings, but nothing that would make me feel like he didn't emerge from this no worse for wear.
Then you're going to fucking hate Guardians of the Galaxy, because the only reason why that movie exists is to help justify Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet.
I'm actually going to... Looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy because at least it looks different.
Yeah, well,
it's not set on Earth.
It looks different. Well, it's not set on Earth in the sense of Star Trek and it's set on Earth, but...
And it's filled with characters that I've never seen before. And it's going to be a story that features elements that hopefully, crossing my fingers, that I haven't seen in Iron Man, that I haven't seen in Thor, that I haven't seen in Captain America. It's a nice change of pace.
And that's fair. That is entirely fair, but I don't know. I mean, maybe it merits a second watching. Maybe in a few months you'll feel differently about it. Maybe after you see Guardians of the Galaxy, you'll feel different about Captain America. But personally, I think that the trajectory of Captain America as a character is right on fucking track. Now, of course, if the third Captain America movie comes out and he doesn't put down the shield, and I'm entirely wrong, we will revisit this issue. I will apologize. I will make no fucking excuses, and then I'm just going to fucking hunt down Kevin Feige and kill him.
He's saying, like, you made me look like an idiot!
You made me look like a fucking douchebag! What the fuck's wrong with you? What are you letting people write for? But in the meantime, you know, like, I think the trajectory is right on track. I liked Winter Soldier. I don't feel like it was good enough. I think it was great. I really walked out of that movie feeling like, man, that was, like, despite the fucking black chick with her fucking phone... That was amazing. Like, that was really good. The action was good. All the character development moments were good. You know, I really felt like Scarlett Johansson's character was less fucking couch, more fucking in the room. And I really enjoyed Nick Fury's role in it. I really did. I liked the little fucking Pulp Fiction reference at the end. That was really cute, but only like three people in the audience laughed at that, and I was one of them. And my friend was like, "What's so funny?"
Like, you remember Sam Jackson was in Pulp Fiction, right? And then he adds two and two together, like, oh,
25-17. I thought that was really cute because he sooner picked up on you know, like, Doctor Strange's name getting dropped than Ezekiel 25-17 being on a fucking headstone. I didn't feel like it was good enough. I felt like it was great. I really liked it. Because it wasn't a dumb action movie. Like, I didn't walk out of it in the same way that I walked out of G.I. Joe and The Losers, where I was like, that was a dumb action movie, and I liked it. It was a dumb action movie when it had to be. It was a political thriller, kind of, when it had to be.
That was my other problem with the movie. I just felt like, oh, no, we're going to have the same song and dance again that we had with RoboCop and Iron Man.
Like, the government makes a really good enemy. It does.
Yeah, I know, but that's why I'm wanting to escape Earth. I'm tired of, like, government bureaucracy is evil kind of plot lines. Give me Guardians of the Galaxy so that way we can fight an alien threat, okay?
And I get that. I know that you don't want to necessarily be constantly mired in the doldrums that is real life when movies are supposed to be about escapism. But you know, like some. But then again, I'm a spy person and you're not. Like we've already established this, that I'm James Bond. You're really not. I like boring movies. You're not huge into them. like you don't like. I just watched Fleming on BBC and I thought it was amazing, but I didn't recommend it to you because I just didn't think you'd be interested in it.
Well, like, I'll tell you this much, like, my favorite James Bond film is up there. Like, my top three Bond films are like GoldenEye, Skyfall, and From Russia with Love. Three different Bond films from the exact same era, but they all revolve around the fact that I didn't like them because of the intrigue. I'm not in it for the intrigue. I'm not even really in it for the gadgets or really the action scenes. But those were like the three films where they kind of looked at Bond in a different way.
Except, you know, since you're not a Bond person, you say, like, they look at Skyfall, they look at Bond in a different way. It's like, yeah, because you didn't see License to Kill.
I saw License to Kill. I was never down on that movie like everyone else was. And I will agree that it got an unfairly bad rap.
Because Timothy Dalton was before his time.
Timothy Dalton was before his time. I just wish that movie didn't have to be ahead of its time. It was like of the moment. It was, you know, it was part of the, like, I wish it was released today.
Yeah.
Like, if it was released today, everyone would love it. Except for Timothy Dalton's sort of performance. I don't know. I felt that was a little too unhinged, as it were. Mm-hmm. Just a little unhinged.
So, I mean, I liked that the enemy, you know, is the government, that you're dealing with a person who believes in the religion of America, but it's America, you know, circa the Great War, and then he wakes up in a world where it's politics and there's a bureau and a fucking, you know, a department for everything. And before, as far as secrets went, you know, you couldn't really keep secrets, like, for instance, making a super soldier. Because we kind of need a whole lot more power than is possible when everyone's awake.
Just a little bit.
You know, like, because, you know, like, they, like, for instance, you know, like when they're talking about, you know, like, the amount of electricity they need and they have to, you know, like, do the experiments at night. That's you know, that was the way shit was then. You know, like the E-type Jag was developed at night because there wasn't enough power in the grid to do it during the day. So that, like, that was really authentic and really cool, but it also gave you a sense of what intelligence was at the time versus what intelligence is now, where everybody's keeping secrets, everybody's got an agenda, everybody's playing chess, not checkers. Meanwhile, this dude comes up with his checkerboard and he's like, okay, so who's gonna king me? Oh, that's cute. I like that for the most part Cap held on in this movie, that he held the faith. In the third movie, if he puts the shield down, I'm totally happy. I will be absolutely happy because, you know, Chris Evans is on his way out anyway, and they're going to make Bucky Cap. So if that, because it, like, the trajectory is that he puts that in the beginning of the movie, he puts down the shield, he kind of, you know, becomes lost, and then he finds himself and he makes the ultimate sacrifice. and then he fucking dies. And then Bucky is Captain America with a gun. So that, you know, that works for me. That totally works as a trajectory of films for me. Meanwhile, you know, like, we don't know what the fuck's going to happen with Iron Man now, because, you know, like, Tony used MacGuffin to get the arc reactor out of his chest, and supposedly he's psychologically fine, but apparently he creates Ultron, so he's not. So I have no idea what Phase 2 is going to end up being, but I'm really interested to find out at this point.
I'd be lying if I said I'm not wondering that myself, but we'll get to that when we get to that. We got about, what is it now, 14 more years of these movies coming out. And I said this at the end of the vlog, and it's true then and it's true now. At some point or another, these movies are going to come out, and we're going to be seeing them less out of enthusiasm and more out of a sense of obligation. Like, well, another Marvel movie's out.
Honestly, you know what? I've never had that problem. I don't go to James Bond movies and I'm like, oh God, I gotta know what's happening with Bond now. I'm like, no, I'm fucking excited. I'm like, fuck, what's happening with Bond? I want to know. Why do you hang on to Red Dwarf for so long? After Craig Charles is totally fucking old and fat now, and why do you hang on to Star Wars movies? Why do you hang on to Star Trek?
And
Because,
I don't. I
well,
really
not well,
don't.
not. I'm not talking about you because you don't have anything that you have a deep abiding love for except for fucking baseball. But for us who have that series that has wronged us, has apologized, has done something, has been there and been great in our formative years, and then turned around subsequently and shat in our hearts like Sonic. Thanks for 10 years of diuretic heart palpitation, Sega. Really appreciate that. You don't feel obligated. Like I didn't feel obligated to go see Captain America. I felt obligated to go see Thor because I didn't give a shit about Thor. But then I went to see Thor: The Dark World, and I was really genuinely impressed by it. I really liked it. I liked it a whole lot more than the first one.
And for the most part, so did I. But again, I'm more partial to Thor because, again, it's not like Iron Man, and it's certainly not like Captain America, where we're allowed to be a little bit fanciful with the environment and fanciful with the tone of the movie. I could get behind like a Shakespearean superhero movie than I can about government is the ultimate evil kind of plot lines that we're just being forced to us by these current Marvel movies now.
Yeah, because I didn't feel after X-Men 3, I didn't feel obligated to go see like I didn't feel a want to see X-Men movies anymore. Brett Ratner killed them for me. And then everybody's like, First Class is fucking amazing. And I went, well, you know what? It'll be amazing on demand. And it was amazing on demand, and I immediately regretted that, but it didn't make me want to go and be like, yes, I need to immediately go back and get into X-Men movies again. Like, Days of Future Past, I'm interested, but I'm not.
Yeah, because you got my hopes up, movie, but I learned from you. You fucking cast Brett Ratner as the director and you shit in my heart. Then you make a Wolverine movie and you
Be
fucked it up.
because fucking X-Men minus Singer equals bad. That's what it is. Is that if you remove Bryan Singer from the production equation, whether it be as director or producer, immediately, X-Men minus Singer equals bad, which is why it is that Wolverine wasn't that great, but the Wolverine was.
I would argue that you should use stronger negative language when you're talking about X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Well, X-Men Origins Wolverine was just all sorts of weird and bad, and Liev Schreiber, I liked him in it as Sabretooth.
Yeah, I mean, Gabe loved him too, but he
Well,
just wished he was in a better
he's got a
movie.
bias, so that doesn't count.
I
He like seriously, he fucking loves any interpretation of Sabretooth, period, so long as he's not, a 90-pound weakling or something with a long haircut.
No, he liked Liev Schreiber as generally liked him better than I forgot who originally played Wolverine in the first X-Men.
Yeah, like I don't fucking care. You
Yeah.
owe me a scream. Eat a dick. But my whole thing with X-Men now is like, okay, so Origins Wolverine was bad, but the Wolverine was actually really fucking good and brutal. We're two movies in terms of like the we're sorry, we can fix it, we can fix it. And Days of Future Past, all it's gonna do is undo X3. That's all it's gonna do.
Which, like on paper sounds like a great fucking idea,
It's a
but
great idea, but what are they gonna explore? Like there are things about it that I'm kind of like, all right, that was interesting. Like they got Peter Dinklage to be a Trask, which I'm like, okay. I mean, in terms of trying to cast a character who feels a deep inadequacy over the human condition, and pretty much, the Lex Luthor motivation is what's the point in being striving to be the best you can be when, there are a sect of people who are just born better than you. So when you cast that character and you cast, a person who has dwarfism, then that's okay. That kind of makes sense. Like he's a small guy. he lives in a world that's not made for him. And then on top of that, there's fucking mutants who can shoot fire out of their hands. Like that's gonna breed hatred and intolerance and inadequacy in a way you've never fucking known. So,
and Lord help you if you're a gay mutant.
Oh Jesus. So yeah, like the idea is as Peter Dinklage as Trask like totally works for me, and they're gonna have Nimrod and that's cool, and they're gonna show the Sentinels and that's really awesome. And so it's got all the makings of, you know, of something called Days of Future Past, where they've got their fucking Bishop, although honestly I would have cast somebody who was a little bit more square jawed as Bishop because Liefeld.
Like, well, how long are you going to keep X-Men beholden to Liefeld?
Well, it's just about the fact that the design of Bishop, is as far as Liefeld's design, makes sense. You know, he's a fucking future hardened bounty hunter, and the guy that they got doesn't look like that. I mean, he's big, but he's not squared. Like if Michael Clark Duncan were still alive and they were like, Michael Clark Duncan is Bishop, I would have been sold.
Just give him a wig.
Just give him a fucking wig. You do it for fucking the dude who plays J. Jonah Jameson all the time. Fucking Cave Johnson.
I know. J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. Like, you do it for Simmons all the time. Like, they just put that man in wigs all the goddamn time. So if you can do it for them, you can do it for Michael Clark Duncan. Or I can't even think of too many, like, really, really square-jawed black guys, but... black actors, but like they exist, they're out there in the industry, and like it's not like I don't think that the guy's performance that is playing Bishop is going to be good. I mean, so long as he's self-serving, moderately annoying, you know, completely inflexible Bishop, then well, guess what, you're Bishop, I believe it.
But like it's the same, like, we're gonna go into the same problem when Cable gets cast. Can you even think of an actor who could conceivably play Cable?
Any wrestler?
I'm
not saying fucking John Cena should be Cable.
Although that would be hilarious.
Or fucking, you know, Batista should be Cable, or like Dwayne Johnson should be Cable. But I'm saying that, you know, you can, maybe Kevin Nash could be Cable.
I suppose. I mean, it's. Right now, that's the most viable option.
I mean, the dude is huge, and he's pretty square-jawed, but he probably doesn't have any real interest in acting, so... Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you could... I mean, there's plenty of wrestlers that, you know, if you train them... If you give them enough time to breathe as actors and you train them properly, you can have a pretty picture-accurate, good-looking Cable. But sometimes it's not really about, like... photo accurate. It's just kind of about, you know, like, well, we need a big guy to be this character. Okay, you're big. Can you act too? Perfect. All right, great. You know, like, if we can get a good actor who's moderately big to play Cable, then that's good enough. You know, not like every every casting decision isn't going to be like James, is it James Marsden, who was Scott Summers, where the dude fucking looked like Scott Summers.
Certainly acted like him, well, or at least the...
Like, you just gotta look at that dude, and you're just like, Jesus!
Did you just, like, did you grow him in a vat?
Right? Like, did you just, like, crossbreed a bunch of people till you found a dude who looked like Scott Summers? This is unfucking canny.
And a little creepy. Put him back where you found him.
Like, Uncanny Valley. Oh, I get it. It's uncanny, so it's the Uncanny X-Men. I gotcha.
But, I see that. Shut up. That's not so clever.
But I'll guarantee you, man, the fucking Days of Future Past is just to get him the fuck back.
Was anyone clamoring for the return of Scott Summers? I know there are Cyclops fans out there. I know you exist.
Like, I know you're fucking out there, you fucking feckless douchebags.
I mean, those guys who think milk is too spicy and saltines or... I know you exist out there, and I wouldn't want you to not be happy, but you look me in the eye and say that Scott Summers is your favorite X-Men, and I will find a liar.
Look.
Because there is no way, anyone could say Cyclops is their favorite X-Men without knowing all the X-Men.
You know what it is that there are two types of people in the world. People who saw the first episode of the 90s X-Men cartoon when they were eight, and people who didn't. You were one of the ones who didn't.
You didn't. No. There are two types of people. People who saw the first episode of X-Men and the rest of the series, and people who only saw the first episode of X-Men.
Please, man. I can drum up an army of people who would argue you down and be like, fucking take one from a pro. Boom.
Boom. That's your one moment. That's your one moment. I mean, That's your one.
I mean, we went so far as to, in the top 20 giant robots list, to cite that the reason why the Sentinel didn't make the list
was because Scott Summers, of all people, of all fucking mutants, was the one to show them up. Huh. Yeah, that's what you call a laser? Here, this is a fucking laser. Boom. Headshot.
But there are two types of people in the world. People who saw that in their formative years, that first episode, and they're like, this show's amazing! And people who didn't, like you, who were like, okay, so what's this X-Men thing? Phoenix Saga, what's that? You know? So...
And also, while I'm railing against X-Men fanboys, people who really love Wolverine, you do realize you're like the Yankees fans of nerds, right? I like Wolverine! Wow, that was really brave of you to say.
Like, I know it's not a popular opinion, but I love Wolverine. Wow. Way to play it safe. Way to live dangerously, asshole.
Like... And you know what? Those Nazis were really wrong. You know, I'm not a fan. Not a fan of those Nazis.
Not a fan of those Nazis. You know, I think it's a really rogue opinion to say that communism doesn't work. That snow is cold and water is wet.
And don't think that this is just for the Marvel people. All right, Batman fanboys. The Joker is not the only villain that Batman faces. He's not. I know you may think
you can't argue this because you're biased. You've got a real, genuine, like, to frame it for you, gentle listeners. See, normally a Batman fan's favorite villain is somewhere between the Joker, Two-Face, and the Scarecrow. But Bennett's off the reservation. His favorite guy is the Riddler.
And Mr. Freeze, it's a tie.
And Mr. Freeze, but you are far more Riddler person.
Yeah, far more Riddler. I mean, like, from a storytelling standpoint, I guess I like Riddler more.
So you can't hammer on people for being like, the Joker is great, because you're sitting there going, the Riddler is great and underutilized.
Damn straight he is! Listen, I'm not saying my opinion is unbiased.
I'm not saying that I did all the Riddler challenges just to listen to the Riddler berate me, but I did.
But I did. He's not wrong.
You cheated. You're a cheater.
I bet you're looking this up on the internet. No.
If the only purpose of Days of Future Past were to do two things, introduce Sentinels and bring Scott Summers back to life, mission accomplished. All is well. Like, that apology is accepted.
That is the most expensive retcon in the history of cinema.
Seriously. Oh my god. But like, if that were the only two goals of Days of Future Past, I will come on fucking Toolshed and be like, apology accepted. X3 didn't happen. Fuck it. We're good. What's X4 gonna be, you know?
Yeah.
I'm all about it.
You better hurry up quick, because I don't think Hugh Jackman has another Wolverine in him.
Are you kidding me? Have you seen the man?
I've seen the man, but like, how many years does it go? Does every X-Men movie go by, right? How many years? Like 2-3 years? An X-Men movie comes out?
Well, the real question is, when Disney finally gets the severed head of Eisner in front of Sony and Paramount, it just like drops it on in their offices to start turning people to stone. Would Jackman still be Wolverine? That's my question. Like, when Disney finally gets all the shit back, would Jackman, if they got it back in a timely manner, like if they just managed to find the fucking loophole that allows them to finish their fucking trilogies and then bring it all back home, bring it all under the Marvel Studios Disney umbrella, would they have the big plentiful balls to establish Wolverine in their universe and say, for all of you Hugh Jackman fans who feel like even though he was too tall to be the role, that he really grew into it, so to speak, we'll give you Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Would they do it? And more importantly, you know, because I don't think that Jackman has any lost love for Wolverine or for doing X-Men. You know, it helped to make him a household name.
No, I don't think he does. I think he was willing to play the Wolverine for as long as his body is able to hold out. But he's on the wrong side of 40.
Well, he is on the wrong side of 40, but fucking look at Stallone. Stallone's juicing like no other, and he's going to have a heart attack sometime inside the next 5 years, but god damn it. Three Expendables movies.
I know, but on the other hand, like, the reason why anyone goes to see the Expendables is not just because of Sylvester Stallone.
Well, no, it's not because of Stallone, but if we're just talking about a man, an actor, what he's capable of doing physically, then, you know, like, you're looking at, I mean, fucking look at Ron Perlman. You know, Perlman's on the wrong side of 40. He's got one more Hellboy movie in him, absolutely.
But that's because he's under, like, 20 pounds of makeup.
Still. I mean, like, look, you can be fucking ripped until you're dead. I mean, look at, like, okay, best example, fucking Randy Savage.
Boomsaws, Randy!
Yeah. Fucking, he was ripped until the grave. He was extra ripped by the time he was dead. He was bigger dead than he was alive.
True, but again, these are all people whose entire appeal rests on the fact of their physique, and Hugh Jackman doesn't have to.
Well, Hugh Jackman doesn't have to necessarily, but at the same time, I mean, he's like zero fucking body fat at this point, and he's like, and if you've seen him lately, he's not small. Like, he's never been a huge ripped guy. He's just been a really fucking chiseled guy, and he got extra super duper cut for Wolverine, for the Wolverine, where he was on like a new diet, and his groinal vein was as big as a fucking vacuum tube, and it was ridiculous, the groinal vein on the man, where it's like, can't you just Photoshop that out? That's really fucking creepy. I didn't know that if you pump iron, your groinal vein gets like fucking huge.
I was about to say, he looks like the casing of a sausage.
Seriously, like, in all those promotional pictures for the Wolverine, his groinal vein seriously looks like, well, that's just where his dick starts. Hey, ladies, how's it going?
I ejaculate straight from the heart.
I ejaculate straight from the heart, you know? I'm the Wolverine, and here's where my dick starts.
My heart grew an extra dick.
Oh my god, it's like, you might think this is my dick, but it's not. He can stay that trim for a good long time. I mean, yeah, he's on the wrong side of 40, but if he stays, you know, fit, healthy, he doesn't smoke, then he's pretty much fucking set. Like, he can be as ripped, as big, as, you know, as lean as he wants to be and continue to be the Wolverine until he decides that he doesn't want to be anymore. And if Disney were to pull their fucking, you know, like, Medusa head, Eisner head trick and turn all the offices of all the people that Avi Arad whored out the Marvel franchises to stone, then I would really wonder if Hugh Jackman would be up for being the Wolverine in the primary Marvel phase universe, and if they would get him to be Wolverine, or would they would try and pull that shit where it's like, well, we're going in our own direction, so we're going to get a new Wolverine. It's like, fucking who?
Who do you know that can play the Wolverine if not Hugh Jackman?
Seriously, like what are you going to do? Honestly. Because it can't be a young guy. It's got to be a guy who's got some fucking miles on the odometer in the first place. And he's going to be able to be gruff and sound gruff and be tough and be fucking lean and cut. And it's not going to be the dude who plays fucking Arrow, all right?
Sorry. Well, this makeshift podcast, I kind of started on a, I want to say a wild tear. It was a wild hair up Mark's ass more than anything. Just angry that I don't like this movie as much as him. And I think it's only fitting now that we've set our pieces on the X-Men movies, that he should be the one to close us out. So, Mark, do what you do best. Bring us on home.
Outro music is always provided by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zerjester. That's X-E-R-Jester. You can now take Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to BendTheSage.com/SuperToolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.